Hello and welcome, dear listeners, to episode 28 of the Universe Podcast. I'm your host, Leo, sitting here today with Kerry.
Hello.
And Philip.
Hello.
And we are here to talk about growing as writers.
Mm-hmm.
Have we grown? We shall see.
I sure hope so.
I sure hope so, yes.
Mentally, but not in size.
I'm sure grown in size.
You have.
You're growing your hair back.
Oh, yes, yes. That always grows back. All right. Let's start with maybe going around and everybody says one thing that they've recently either learned or discovered that you're becoming better at.
I can start.
Yeah.
I have recently received some feedback on a text that I submitted for a competition.
Mm-hmm.
It was a few months ago, and I think I did, in that waiting period, waiting for the feedback, I did some growing, but in the feedback I got, there was some mention of a lack of subtext, which I think, since I've gotten the feedback and since I've written that particular text, I've gotten better at. I think so far my problem was that I, when I read text at a universe group, it was that I just wanted to be 100% clear as to what I was talking about. And I think I need to learn to trust my readers to be smart.
Okay, yeah. So your stories weren't very subtle.
Yeah, it was kind of on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
Heart on the sleeve, just saying what you think.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Which, can be good.
Yeah.
I assume as a character, characteristic of a character.
Actually. Yeah, I think it's also important just to know when to use subtext and when to just use text.
Yeah, true.
Because too much subtext is, it's just weird because then you ask yourself, why don't they just say what they mean,
mm-hmm.
the characters?
Beating around the bush all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be like, when you write, it might be context dependent on the setting of the scene. Maybe it's social conventions that somebody is, what was it? I did watch a couple of videos in subtext, and there was the example of The Great Gatsby.
Mm-hmm.
There was a scene, I have to be honest, I never read it or watched it, so I'll just refer to them as the man and the woman. So there's this woman who has a husband, but she is also kind of in love with the man, Leonardo DiCaprio's character, I think. But she can't just straight out say that, just kind of talking around that, using metaphors.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's like a social convention where that works, where you shouldn't use too much, what's the opposite of subtext? We shouldn't use on-the-nose language.
Yeah, I guess.
Or something that I've just noticed, rewatching Mulan again, as I do, there's a great scene it's in the beginning, after Mulan sings Reflection, where she clearly, there's just some subtext in the scene where, I guess it's obvious that she's concerned about not fulfilling expectations. The father sits down next to her and he talks about flowers or blossoms on a tree and how there's like one flower that's not blossomed yet, but once it does, it will be the most beautiful one of them all. And I think that's a nice example for nice subtext.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's obvious enough, but it's not too obvious, I think.
Okay, yeah. That's good. It's a good thing to learn. How about you, Kerry?
I'm not sure. I think I've gotten better at revisiting my old texts over the time and editing them. Because originally I had this approach once I'd finished writing a text, I'd just leave it,
mm-hmm.
and never get back to it again. And now that, particularly with Universe, I've started going back and editing them and let's call this correcting mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helped me a lot as well.
How did you get there? I mean, what was the impetus?
Well, I think if you constantly get feedback from people, mm-hmm. at some point you just can't be like, okay, fine, I got the feedback. I'm just still going to leave the text the way it is and say goodbye to it.
Mm-hmm. That would be useless. You would have done the whole thing for nothing. What did I recently learn? Something I learned, I think, is that you can use an idea more than once, that you can have that one phrase that starts the poem going for more than one. You can just use it as, you know, I don't know, the seed, and you plant the seed more than one time and you see what flowers come of it.
Within the same poem?
No, just, you know, you've got one phrase that you execute that phrase, or one, like, conceit, I guess.
Okay.
You execute that once, and then after some time you do it again and see what comes of it this time. Write another poem with the, like, maybe I should say that, that for me often it's kind of one phrase that won't go, or that I find particularly interesting, or that doesn't go out of my mind, that keeps floating around my brain for a while, and then I'll use that as the starting idea or line in a poem. And that I can use those lines more than once was something that had never occurred to me before, but it's quite obvious. And I think I'm getting better at getting a feeling for, a more analytical feeling for what sounds right when.
Mm-hmm.
That when lines aren't working, I know what's not working, like sound-wise. I didn't really have that before. It was like kind of, you know, a hit and miss kind of thing. And now, like, I wrote a poem yesterday where I was like, okay, this line isn't working because it's got too many T's and D's.
Oh, okay.
Like, sounds that obstruct the airflow in the front of the mouth, and the rest of the sounds of the whole poem were all a very fleeting sound. So words with lots of vowels or only obstructive consonants that obstructed the airflow more in the back, or were fricatives or something like that.
So you think a lot about when you write a poem, how you're going to read it out loud.
Yeah, because I guess I do that because
it's part of the process.
It's part of the process, and it really trips you up when a line isn't working, right? I don't know. I can't quite pinpoint it yet most often, but sometimes you just feel that, like, the rest of the poem obviously has some kind of innate rhythm that you may not have been going for, but that's there in itself, I guess, or I don't know, you may have been going for unconsciously. And then at the point that I am now, I can notice that when it's not working, and maybe hopefully also what's not working.
So, can you reveal what the phrase is that you come back to? Is that too personal?
I mean, that differs for every single poem. Like the last phrase I executed was a heavy darkness. I heard that in a podcast. I heard a guy say that phrase, and I thought that was just a very beautiful picture, an interesting combination of words, because you don't usually think of the absence of light having physical weight. Another thing, what else did I have recently? I mean, sometimes it's also just general ideas. I've been trying to execute that idea again of writing a poem about the Soviet space program.
Oh,
because I think it's such an interesting thing that, like, they were in a state of agricultural, partly feudal society in the 1910s, and then 50 years later they are sending a satellite to space.
It's quite a complex premise for a poem.
Yes, that makes it very hard to execute. I've been struggling a lot because it's like I've been trying to fit the historical events of 50 years into like five or six lines.
That's a lot.
I mean, that's one line per decade.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, I put the Russian Civil War and World War II in one.
All right.
So yeah, I might have to work on that execution again. And I wrote another one where the premise was, do you know, have you ever, I'm sure you have, you've seen ruins of houses, and usually you only have the foundations. Mm-hmm. And those foundations, they do tell us something about the people who lived there, but usually only about the people who lived on the ground floor. If there was more than one, if there's more than one floor, all the other floors are gone. We don't know, there's, of course, the floors fall down, they fall to the ground, but there's much less left of the people who lived on the second story than there is of the people who lived in the first story. Yeah, that's the conceit for one. you both said that feedback has been important for you, for Universe, I suppose, and the feedback you got from that that writing competition. As we are the Universe podcast, we should maybe talk a bit about how the Universe has treated us, how the Universe has helped us grow as writers.
I guess I'll start if Kerry gives me the devil's eyes.
It's not the devil's eyes. I was just trying to make you start so I wouldn't have to.
I will take that social clue.
It was very subtle.
Yeah, it was very subtle.
Write that down.
How has the Universe helped me? I think in a lot of ways, because I guess it's a bit of a long answer, because we've also changed the way we give feedback.
True.
At the very beginning, because we're kind of a young society, at the very beginning was just anything that you think about the text. And then we came up with the idea, hey, maybe the writer should ask for specific feedback, which I think helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I've also been listening to this one podcast by the guys.
Start with this. They had a brilliant episode about feedback.
Yes,
and I find it so interesting that some of the things they suggested, we kind of came to naturally just out of 2 years of experience.
Yeah, asking for specific feedback, setting a time limit, and establishing that you want feedback.
Mm-hmm. We should maybe say for other people, Kerry, have you heard about Start With This?
No, I was going to suggest we put it in the description.
Yeah, I've been planning to post about it on Facebook anyway for a while now. It's by the guys who made, among many other things, the Welcome to Night Vale podcast. They're both podcast and novel writers and playwrights, and they are doing a podcast about creative writing, where they talk about one topic and then they give you a practical assignment, something that you do and something to consume relating to writing, or any kind of, all art, basically. But I think it's very cool. And yeah, I find many things in the feedback episode that we as the Universe also already do. Yeah,
it was kind of cool to see these parallels between us and some might say more professional writers.
Yes, I was also very proud of us.
Yeah.
Also that we started, I think it's good that we started limiting the feedback time, because we did sometimes ramble on about unnecessary things for a bit long, like punctuation.
And what about the semicolon?
Yeah, I still get flashbacks from the punctuation wars.
The punctuation wars.
To be honest,
2017.
To be honest, though, some of us need that.
we do, but then I think as a writer, you can then ask for punctuation feedback.
I'm just terrible with commas. Yeah. They hate me.
I mean, if you're doing poetry, you can just not do punctuation. So just do a punctuation there where it should be.
Why do you think I love it so much?
Yes.
You can do all lowercase writing, like a sassy tweet.
Ooh, like me some sassy tweets.
I think to actually answer your question, how it helped me, I think it just helped me see things about my writing that I didn't see myself, but it were kind of obvious to everybody else. Mm-hmm. For example, how I write dialogue is kind of, at least at the very beginnings, it was just very similar to how you would write dialogue in a script for film or TV show. Was just very little actual description. It was very dialogue heavy. And I think that's something I've been working on, because I don't think that dialogue heavy is necessarily like a form of criticism or negative critique. But I think for certain prose texts, you don't want your text to read as a script.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I think also that like the most basic aspect of the universe, that you've got a place where you can share your writing, and that motivates you to write more, because that's, after all, how we all get better over time, I suppose, by writing and writing more. That's just that alone in itself is already a good thing about the universe.
Yeah, also, when you get like good feedback, as in a sense of people really liking your story and telling you what they like about it,
mm-hmm.
it makes you feel just great, mm-hmm. and wanting to write more.
Every time after the universe, yeah. Basically, even if you didn't send something in yourself, you walk out there feeling like super energized. I need to go write something now.
Yeah. It was strange for me. Just I'll let Carrie talk in a minute. Just one more thing.
I love listening to you. Please continue.
A few weeks ago, I did read a story at the universe for our like April Fool's event that I got really great feedback on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got home and I saw the email from the competition that was for some parts kind of harsh or a little condescending.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a confusing day for me. Just,
okay, yeah.
How do I feel about this?
Mm-hmm. But then again, I mean, if you got that good experience just before that.
Yeah.
I did think about
how the email was for something that I wrote 3 months ago, and just how much I've grown in that in the meantime.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wanted to say that having something so good happen before that kind of, I guess, inculcates you against whatever bad feedback comes after.
Yeah.
It dulls the blows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But also in times like these, you've got to remember that everyone's a critic.
Yeah.
And in some cases, you yourself are your biggest critic. So that's also how the universe helps, because sometimes it's good to hear other people's perspective on a text. When you sit there and are like, this is never going to work, this is a terrible text.
Yeah.
And then you hear other people's feedback on it, and suddenly you're like, oh, but I can make something out of it, and that something is going to be great.
Yeah. They tell you what they like about your text, and then you can take that and go on with that. Yeah, I also think that's brilliant. Something I also really like about the universe that helps us grow as writers is the mere act of giving feedback, for asking feedback, because you need to learn how to put into words what you're going for, and to put into words what you like about a text. And I think that's really great, because then also when you go back to writing, you have a more like a clearer picture in your mind of what you're going for.
And also finding what you like and what you dislike in other people's texts gives you a new perspective on your own text sometimes. So,
I wrote something down about that. This ability of being so analytical about my own texts or your own texts. I find that still I struggle with that, because especially for older texts that I wrote quite a while ago, I find it very difficult to separate my feeling of whatever feeling I may have towards that person, that like past version of me that wrote the text. I find it very difficult to separate that from the quality of the writing itself. And I think that's something that I think giving feedback kind of help with that, because then maybe not, you know, as far as the general impression of the, like a text or poem is concerned, but like on the individual sentence or structure basis, having a more analytical view can help you get past those feelings. Do you ever also experience such feelings that you can't really approach the text analytically because you're too bound up in within yourself, maybe?
Like emotionally connected to the text?
Mm-hmm.
It depends on why I wrote a text, because I think most of the texts that I write are for the purpose of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes there will be an element, there will be something from my real life that I put into a text, but that's usually like minimal. But if I do write a text that's more biographical, I think I will be more attached to it, and I won't really know what's good about it and what mm-hmm. isn't, because when you tell your life story, the thing is that life isn't, you know, a perfect narrative with a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's confusing, and plot points don't get wrapped up.
It's dangerous for your whole conception of a self to go back, because you're confronted with the fact that you yourself are so malleable, I suppose. And it's a weird and sometimes very uncomfortable feeling having to find out that you're so unstable, your personality, yourself. Oh, we're getting deep into, I know. I'm experiencing the mirror stage over and over again, I guess.
I'm not much of an analytical writer. I can be analytical and I can be cold and calculating if I want to. But most of the time, I'm a very emotional writer.
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not it's me exactly writing down the situation that I'm in, or writing down my own feelings, or writing down something completely different, my feelings always get into the middle of everything. But for some reason, when I go back and revisit my texts, I either agree with myself or I'm like, this is what I felt like back then. Interesting. Oh, what a fool I have been.
Yeah, but that's good, I guess, for personality growth, but doesn't really do much as far as the quality of the writing is concerned.
Not really.
Because I know there was, like, I always notice in my own writing that even though I don't plan it to match up in the end, you know, some poems, they're talking to each other, they're kind of forming a chain of, you know, something that even maybe if I didn't really notice it at the time, was obviously bothering me at the time, or on my mind, I suppose. And I've got those, I don't know, what would you call that? I guess serious. I guess I'd call it serious. I've got a few of that, and I recently wanted to go back to one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found a really hard time, because I remember really liking them at the time I wrote them.
All right.
But now I went back to them and I don't like the poems anymore. And I don't know if it is because I've kind of exited that stage I was in at that point, or if it is because the poems really were shit. If the poems really were shit, I mean, it's not very likely, but like, because I spent like basically one semester at the universe reading these poems, and some of them got quite good feedback. But, you know, and then I thought, maybe, you know, when you're doing this kind of editing, you should maybe do it with two people. That you've got, you know, you've got somebody by your side who helps you a bit, and you can't fall into that, oh my God, everything's horrible, I'm horrible, I should just quit.
You need an angel and a devil on your shoulder.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Somebody, for both the good parts and the bad parts about your writing. Thinking about that, this past Sunday, Saturday, which is yesterday, we did a bit of a writing hangout with the universe, and I really loved that, because we're both like basically always two people sitting at one table and kind of not really like writing side by side, some more or less than others, but you always had, you know, somebody to riff off of, like you could say, hey, what do you think about this line, can I read my poem to you, does the meter make sense to you? And then sometimes some of us just yelled into the room, hey guys, I need a synonym for this and this word. And this is what I want the synonym to sound like, how long I want it to be. And then we like collectively brainstormed, because obviously there's no internet and no thesaurus in the basement of Highlander.
I was going to say that's some very specific requests.
There were very specific requests, yes. I was looking for a description of the ground that is short. Uh-huh. And the ground is supposed to be ragged, as if something was wrong about the ground.
It's a four-letter word, horizontal.
Yes, yes. We ended up with cleft.
Cleft.
Right. This whole situation sounds very familiar to what I did this morning.
Yeah.
Because I've recently started playwriting. So today I met up with a friend at Starbucks and mm-hmm. she was writing her... I'm not sure if it was her paper for one of her classes or a presentation. I think she wrote both. And I was sitting next to her writing my play and every once in a while I'd just look up and be like, I need a synonym for good that has one syllable, sounds bright and glorious.
Yeah. And that's also what
and
I meant
makes
before.
Sense in terms of what this character would say because he's kind of a bit of a jerk.
Yeah, that's also what I meant before with kind of learning how to describe what you're going for, because then you really have to be very specific. I mean, I wasn't very specific, i.e. I need to learn how to formulate that better, and maybe that'll help me know what I need in the future. So I think we should do that more often. It was great fun. You should come sometime.
I wanted to, but I had a first aid course.
Also important. Something, I guess, I suppose, being good at first aid can, in some situations, be better than being good at poetry.
But only in some.
Yeah. Not in universe situations. Hopefully.
Nobody Let's die at our meetings, it. Please.
Or if you feel like you're dying, leave the room. I'm just kidding.
So I was wondering, as I was thinking about feedback and how I applied it to my own texts, how I looked back at old texts, and we talked about this kind of yesterday. We talked about like the writing you did as a teenager mm-hmm. and how that's maybe, you know, it's air quotes good for a 16-year-old, 15-year-old, mm-hmm. and I've been thinking, since we talked about this, when do we go from good for a certain age to just good, period? And I was just wondering what makes a good text?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I don't think, I mean, there is something to how much experience you have.
Mm-hmm.
But I think then again, there's also that some people just bring something so new to the table that even though, I don't know, they may start at 35, 40, mm-hmm. whenever, they bring something so new to the writing table, I suppose, that it's still, like, the product is still really interesting. And yeah, I mean, at one point, do you, if you think about, I don't know, famous writers, mm-hmm. you don't think about, you know, J.K. Rowling and say, well, she writes well for her, however old she is. We only really do that for teenagers.
Yeah, that's true.
And maybe we shouldn't do that.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't,
But again, you also can have like that, how much of this is, you know, like personality development and how much of this is how long the person's been writing already. Mm. Because even teenagers, I suppose, if you start with 13 and you write a lot, I don't know, till you're 17, mm-hmm. you'll be a pretty darn good writer with 17.
But I still think that to some extent, we should still use the good writing for a certain age
mm-hmm.
because it's a form of encouragement. Because, of course, there's like mm-hmm. mistakes in there. There's style errors, depending on what style you use, because... And all that. So it's encouraging for those people who write to hear you're writing good for your age.
Mm-hmm.
Because then if we judge them by what other people write, adults who've been writing for their entire life, they might be discouraged by that and mm-hmm. feel like they're terrible writers and never write a single poem ever again. Mm-hmm. And that would be a pity.
True, yeah.
I thought about... a few writers from the universe group, how some of them were quite new to writing in general, but were always kind of interested, including me. Hello. And if you look at their, you know, very first submission, I remember thinking about the first submission when they submitted it on that day. Like, this is good for new writers. It's good for, you know, just having started. And then some of these people, they just grow in their writing. Like every single week, that you see them get better at different aspects, at using structure, at using subtext, at using dialogue. And what was my point? Where was I going? Age.
Learning. Getting better.
I think my point was just it's just really great to see people grow, and that, oh yeah, my point was that it's, in a certain context, it's completely okay to tell someone they're a good writer for a certain stage of their life or of their writing career.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's difficult for us because we're maybe just we're in this period where you don't really say anymore somebody's a good writer for 25-year-olds or 23 or whatever. You say, you know, there's a good up and coming writer, I assume.
We're too old now.
That's not too bad either. Maybe it also is that we are, I suppose, we're subject to more, like, we may be subject to harsher criticism because we don't have that benefit of youth anymore. But then again, there's no authority coming here to judge us for our writing, unless we submit it to publishing houses or something.
And authority. Yeah.
Sorry. We are the authority here.
The authority.
Now I'm thinking if there's a thing as a writority.
Maybe somebody here could write a story about like a dystopian universe where
it's ruled by authors.
Yes, where authors have all the political power, and there's like one dictatorial party that is the author, or like a committee that is the authority.
I don't know what committee you're referring to, Leo.
Definitely not the committee of the universe, and we don't have plans to take over the world.
Nuh-uh.
Not yet.
I think
officially
we'd become better writers for that.
Or better autocrats.
Yes.
Better at manipulating the space-time continuum.
I mean, that's basically what you're doing when you're writing, isn't it? At least in your head.
Yes.
I think this whole topic of good writer for this and this age is also kind of bound up in your own, I guess, at least when you look back on your own writing, it's kind of bound up in your own development of your own personality. Because, like, yeah, you may go back and say that's for my age, if you're looking favorably at your own writing at that time, for my age, I was writing well at that time. If you can, maybe that's also a skill to develop. To being able to you know, because I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but as I grow, I do tend sometimes to look back negatively at my former self, I suppose, and that would be something to learn for saying, hey, the way I was and the way I wrote at that time, which is kind of tied up for me, I guess. It's all right. It was okay for the stage of life I was in.
I mean, I guess it's good to look back and think I'm better now than to think, oh, I was better then.
Yeah, well yes. Yeah, I do. I sure hope I haven't peaked yet.
I hope so too for you.
Since we were talking about what makes a text good,
mm-hmm.
I think as long as a text makes you feel something,
yeah,
it has achieved its purpose, and therefore like as long as it makes you feel or makes you react to it in a certain kind of way, it's a good text.
Well, then you can also often that's something they said on Start With This, is that you can't control what people will feel when they read your text, when they hear your text.
No.
And then maybe you'll do that. You'll learn something new about what was good about your text.
And you'll learn something about you, and you'll learn something about them.
Yeah.
So no matter what the reaction is you wanted, or what the reaction is you getting, the fact that you are getting a reaction is the whole thing that sort of should be your aim when you're writing.
Mm-hmm. Evoked something.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, then all we need to learn is how to evoke something. It should be a piece of cake.
We just need to learn how to feel.
Yeah, it should be done by tomorrow. All right.
With our cold, dead hearts.
Yeah, I hope everybody could take something away from this discussion. This was episode 28 of the Universe Podcast. If you enjoyed it and would like to hear more of us, make sure to subscribe to the Universe Podcast wherever you're listening to it. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review to tell us what you think and help other people find the podcast. And tell all your friends about it. Comments? Questions? You can reach us on Twitter. We're at PodUniverse. On Facebook, or on our email address, podcast@universe.univ.org. This podcast was edited and hosted by Leonhard Engelmeier. On the panel were Kerry Whitman and Philip Kreuz. I hope you visit this planet and the universe again. In the meantime, stay safe in space. Thanks for listening.